Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life.
I always tell social media to meet people where they are. If you want to find out about my site through Facebook, let me show up on Facebook and be there. If you want to get your news on Twitter, I will be in all of these places. I will meet you there.
This week, we're continuing our conversation with Smitten Kitchen's Deb Perlman to talk about her cookbooks, her web TV series, and all this other good stuff that she's doing. You know, before we talk about your books, I want to talk a little bit more about voice. I think your readers identify with you. You know, you're self-deprecating in the extreme. You fumble around quite visibly. You struggle with juggling work and family. You're very open about any number of things, from your many failed attempts at making something to using other cooks and cookbook writers as inspirations, which I think is great. And I get the feeling that your readers don't just identify with you, they want to be you. It's like, it's a little bit like I feel about Ree Drummond and Pioneer Woman.
I want to be the pioneer.
You know, it's like your editor was once quoted as saying that you are a woman who has become, in a very 21st century way, a dear friend of theirs.
Wow. That's very flattering. And it's so interesting to me because when somebody says they think I'm, like, cool, I'm like, how have I failed to tell you the truth? How is my repeated,
no, you know, I didn't say you were cool.
Okay,
I
good,
just said you
I'm
were my
like,
friend.
Sorry, see, there you go. That's insane. I'm trying to say, like, how have I failed to tell you how, like I feel like I failed somehow. I'm not trying to vet her. Yeah, anyway.
You know, I once sat with Ree Drummond at a book signing she did. She said, the only way I'm going to get to see you, because she also started around when we started, right?
Do you remember? Do you remember that I told you about her? I did. I know. Maybe this sounds crazy.
I believe you.
I was
you.
Like, you know who? I said, look, I'm not doing a good job getting these articles into you. Have you seen the Pioneer Woman?
Yes.
I told you about
you
her.
You did. Now I do remember you told me about her, and I ended up going to see the ranch.
I was like, she is on fire.
She is on fire.
Brand new. She's been blogging for fewer years than me, and it's like
she's the Martha Stewart of the 21st century.
She really is.
Yeah.
And she knew what she wanted.
Oh my
which
God.
I was
Talk
like,
about focus.
I know. And I guess and when I also went out to the ranch at one point and we had some conversations about some projects that had come up that would involve us, and she was like, why would I let somebody else do that project for me? I should start my own project. And I was like,
I know. When I went out to the ranch, she was like, oh yeah, this used to be the bunkhouse. We're gonna make it into our TV studio.
Wow.
Wait. You're a blogger and you're building a TV studio. Mm-hmm. On your ranch, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah, she always do it. It's so interesting because when I was at the book signing with her, all these people came up to her and they really, no matter if they were hipsters from Brooklyn, mm-hmm. or they'd driven in from Pennsylvania, they all wanted to be her. And I always thought that was so interesting. And I think you have that same ability. I mean, I've never been to a book signing of yours.
It's very flattering. And I guess I hope it's just because I'll be honest with people about stuff. Maybe that's it. But I don't think, it's very glamorous or anything what I do.
Well, let's talk about the first book, which is called Smitten Kitchen, and how it came about. Was it like, somebody wants me to do a book? Or was it, oh, the next step is doing a book?
It was the former. I'm a little bit embarrassed. This is like, I have grown up too. But in the beginning, and this is really just a certain age. I feel like if you were writing on the web in certain years and you had, anybody had heard of you, you had an agent who had reached out to you. Or three, or four, or 12. It was just, they were looking at blogs. And if your blog was out there and it was getting any attention, you had heard. So for me, from 2003, I had been hearing from agents and editors. No, I did not think I needed to write a book. I thought it was like, I was like, why would I need a book? I have the web. The web is all I'll ever need. And that was really very much my mindset. And I, it's like so ridiculous to say this, and it's so insulting to somebody who really wants to write a cookbook that I was so flippant about it, but I had to be talked into it.
How did writing the book differ from writing the blog?
It was just so much harder. I don't know why, because the idea was it was going to be the same, like the similar format. Here's an intro. Here's a recipe. Here's a picture or two. And this is what I do every day. And I do not pull my hair out all the time doing this. And the book was like, it took me like 3 years to write it. And then it took me 5 years to write the second, like, you know, 5 years between the two books. I don't know why it's so much harder, but it just is.
Is it because you felt when you're writing for a book, you're writing for posterity?
Maybe. And I think I felt like I was really outside my comfort zone. I also was absolutely convinced that writing a book was some sort of like, I don't know, it was like selling out, but it was just, I don't know, it seemed silly to me, like I was jumping the shark. And also, I was convinced that most people just saw me as this like flash in the pan. And that this book was probably going to be the last thing that
right,
I ever wrote.
And like, somebody was going to tap you on the shoulder and say, Deb.
And you're done.
And you're done.
And it was actually going to ruin, take the blog down with it when the book was panned. These were live and real things that were in my head until the first day that it maybe hit the bestseller list. And then I was like, okay, 1 week of not thinking this way. Let me see if I can make it to next week.
So in short order, the book went from being your Titanic to being the America's Cup winner.
I mean, I don't know if I ever, but I was like, okay, so I did it this one time. But I never really, so I really just thought that it was just going to take me down with it and that it was just this, yeah. So I was petrified.
You didn't put every recipe from the site into the book,
No, not
right?
at all. In fact, the book is 85% new recipes. And the only reason there are any from the site is just for like kind of continuity, where it's sort of like, how could you call it a Smitten Kitchen cookbook if you don't have these five favorites that are five of the best recipes on the site? So it was always planned that way. I wanted it to be a value. I was really concerned about long-term readers feeling like this was not a book for them. It had to be a value for them. I wasn't going to ask you to buy stuff I'd been giving you for free, like you didn't know how money worked, you know?
Yeah, that's funny. You know, one of the things that I read in one of the articles about you is that somebody who was at a signing said, I had to have this book. I needed to own something physical that you wrote. And I thought that was such an interesting way to look at a book, which is in the physical world, right? It's not in the digital world.
That's a very sweet thing. I don't remember that at all, but that's very sweet. I know, and I guess, you know, I just maybe just because I came up through the web, I didn't get the importance. I mean, like when I sat down with an agent, she had to explain to me what the big six were. Like, I didn't know about publishers. I didn't know anything about the publishing process and who they were and what they wrote and what their styles were. And I mean, I had to get like publishing 101 education.
Right.
First.
And we should say the big six were the big six publishing house or conglomerates at the time.
And now it's like five,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, or four or whatever.
Yeah.
So were you obviously surprised at a success? I mean, I read one story that said you're at like 325,000 copies and still growing strong. How the hell did that happen?
I don't know. I haven't looked at the. I really genuinely have not looked at the numbers. I'm not being coy because it. I just haven't looked. You know how, you know, the way you get the thing twice a year and then you're like, oh, okay, there's
right.
that number.
The royalty.
And then
statement.
Twice a year, 9 months after you actually sold the books, and then royalties are amazing. And then, yeah, so you get it twice a year, and then I take a look, and then I remember the number for like a week, and then it falls out of my head. I don't know why, but it doesn't stay in my head.
So name three recipes from the first book that you think people who just bought the book should make.
I had it on the site first, but you should make the broccoli slaw. You should make.
Yeah, these are from the first book?
This is the first book.
Right.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Am I here? First book.
First book, you should make the broccoli slaw. You should make, again, this is, I see this also came over from the site, which is not a very good argument. I love the spaghetti squash tacos in there.
Okay.
I have been trying to save spaghetti squash from spaghetti and meatballs tethers for years, and the spaghetti squash tacos are amazing. I also really like the New York breakfast casserole, which is a savory bread pudding, but you make it with bagels and cream cheese.
That's a pretty awesome recipe.
I was worried it was a little kitschy at the time. Like, I actually pulled it and then put it back in the book several times, but I love that recipe.
So how did the success of the first book change your life?
Absolutely not, even in the smallest way, except for people started asking from like the minute it came out if I was working on a second book. I'm like, are you crazy? But that's one of those things that I rehear as like an adult now, you know, and I'm like, that's kind of rude, Deb. Like, you should pay more respect for that. So I don't talk that way anymore. But at the time I was like, that was horrible. Because it was very difficult and I saw no need to do it again. Plus, it was only going to be downhill from there.
Yes. Well, you know what? There was an old saying in the music business when I was in the record business, when there was such a thing as the record business, that you had 25 or 30 years to make your first album and then 6 months to make your second.
That sounds about right. Except I took 5 years to write the second. And again, I thought it would be easier the second time, but I was immediately back in that place. This time, the fear was that that was going to have been the only good thing I ever wrote. And I was really paralyzed with this idea that this was just going to be the sinker that took me down with it. Because I believe that even if it isn't a sophomore slump, people believe it to be, especially if you should have such luck as I did to have success with the first book. It's always going to be, well, I liked the first book more.
Right.
I could have written every negative Amazon review for you before I even wrote the book.
That's hilarious.
I like the first book better. This doesn't, it is what happens with second books.
Yes, it's true.
I tried to find evidence of authors who'd written second books that people liked more there, and they absolutely exist, but there aren't, it's far more common for people to dislike the second book.
No, it's true. Let's talk about social media, which I think you utilize really, really well. And it's hard to do. And I would say that there are a lot of food bloggers who use social media as an end unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're more marketers than writers. And you've always been very good at sort of separating what you will do and what you won't do in terms of sponsored posts. And yet you utilize Instagram and all those kinds of vehicles really well.
Well, thank you. I really like Instagram. So I genuinely like social media. I spend my time on social. I spend more time than I should on social media like everybody else. But I also am like, I'm not making money on social media. Like it's not purely a money thing, but like my product is the recipes on the site. And if people aren't coming to the site, which of course is harder and harder to get people to do, I can't actually earn a living doing and continue doing what I'm doing. So I've never really put recipes up on social media. I'd like you to come and be able to read the long format. That was just the basic economic 101 of it.
Right. And so did you start by utilizing all Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, and then your strategy sort of evolved as you saw what was working and what you liked doing?
A little bit. You know, I try not to. I definitely see bloggers and other people where it becomes their whole life and then they kind of don't like it. And so I always thought it comes second. Like, you have to know what you're selling, I guess that makes, you know, for me, it's the stories, it's the recipes. And so I always saw social media as meet people where they are. If you want to find out about my site through Facebook, let me show up on Facebook and be there. If you want to find out, you know, if you want to get your news on Twitter, I will be in all of these places. I will meet you there. But I'm still going to tell you what I'm doing, where I'm doing it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. There are many other food bloggers who do a lot more sponsored content,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, if Hellman's Mayonnaise, mm-hmm. not that there's anything wrong, I love Hellman's Mayonnaise,
me
saying,
too.
You know, hey, would you do 6 recipes using Hellman's Mayonnaise? That's not what you do. Is that just a philosophical decision?
It's a philosophical thing for me. And it's not a judgment. I mean, who am I to tell anyone how they should make money? I am lucky that I've been doing this long enough that I've been able to make a living through ads, which is so rare on the web these days. It's so rare. So I get that. So this is not, it's hard to talk about it without sounding like you're passing judgment on people. But this is a little bit the journalism background where you just don't want to muddy your ads and your content. But I also felt like I'm really concerned about survival because once I made this leap to make this my full-time job, and I felt like if the only way I'm able to break even is by chasing these advertisers, like at some point we're just haggling over the price,
right?
Because if I can't find a buyer, I'm just going to have to keep lowering my prices and I'm not going to be able to sustain what I'm doing. So it was philosophical where it felt wrong to me, but also I didn't know how it was really going to economically sort out.
And what's interesting about you, and this is different than Ree Drummond, a pioneer woman, is that you're still basically a one-man band, as far as I can tell.
I am. It's not the smartest thing I've ever done. It is not making me feel younger. I am like every year, I'm literally working on my editor job ad right now. I'm working on hiring an editor. I have some part-time help who helps me, like a Sarah who helped coordinate this. I do my own social media. I do my own everything. And part of it is that you could say I'm a control freak, but it's more that how are you going to answer email for me? How are you going to write for me? How are you going to edit photos for me? It's all my vision.
It's
you
true.
Can't write the recipe for me.
Even at Serious Eats, when Stella writes a recipe, mm-hmm. they don't want to hear my response to a question they have about Stella's recipe. They want to hear from Stella, or they want to hear from Daniel, or they want to hear from Sola. Just like when I write a piece, they want, you know, they're going to say, hey, Ed, they don't want a social media person to answer that.
Yeah.
They want you.
I feel like I would damage what I'm doing and also not do a very as good of a job of it. And also, I can't clone myself. It does limit how much you can do. You can't go as far. You can't take on. I've been notoriously terrible freelancer over the years because I can't be in two places at once. So, yeah, it really limits it. But at the same time, I feel like if people want to hear from you, it doesn't work if somebody else is doing the talking.
And I guess it all depends on what your definition of success is. You are limiting the upside.
Mm-hmm.
You're building the brand of Spittin' Kitchen in your own image, mm-hmm. in a way that you're comfortable with. Even though any MBA would tell you that you are not maximizing your revenue opportunities.
My husband is an MBA. As I said, we don't work at home together on the site. He has his own job. And he's an MBA, and he would say exactly that. Like, he's tried. But I guess I feel like this is I'm not looking to diversify the site. Like, I want to do this. There are times where I'm like, I really wish I had more time to do more video, and I wish I had more time to do some more of these Instagram lives. And then I go, okay. Then I start looking at, what am I doing, and does this actually have to be done by me? And that was one of these things, scheduling. Like,
right.
Very nice, like, invitations. I don't actually have to be the person that responds, and that was a very useful thing.
Yeah.
And I actually, that happened when I did my first book tour, where the publishers had a publicist handling all of it. And I was like, this is kind of like, yeah, I don't need to schedule my own stuff. And I stole the publicist. That's basically what happened.
And has anyone else ever had a byline on Smitten Kitchen?
No, I've had some friends do, like, in very early days where we thought nobody was reading, do some guest posting. And we have a little post in there from my dad. But I never felt like it worked as well. I'd rather you contribute a paragraph. I would rather interview you. But I think it needs to be me and what I want to tell you
about
it.
For you. And that's what's interesting. And, you know, for me, it's Serious Seats. When I saw the success of recipe and technique posts that Kenji was doing, this is not what I do, right? So it's like, I could either be stubborn and stupid and unsuccessful, or I could say, hey, this is what people are responding to.
Mm-hmm.
No one can ever take away the founder description.
Yeah.
You know, it's like somebody had to bring these people together, but it's a different kind of thing than what you're doing at Smitten Kitchen.
You had started out with, it was not just Ed Levine's voice, and I think that's good. I think it's always been a little harder for me when I love a blog and they bring in a bunch of writers. Very few do this in a way where I feel like I'm as equally invested in the writers. I can think of a couple examples where they've brought them in slowly, introduced them, and then this is what they're into, and you very much knew it was their post, and you get to know their personality. But it has to kind of go slowly. When five additional authors show up, I'm like, who am I talking to?
Mm-hmm.
Can you just tell me who the original persons were?
And right.
I mean, that's a very intelligent way, by the way, to grow a site, is to diversify and become more of a web magazine. And I've often wondered if I should, but I'm so busy doing what I do, it's never really gone anywhere with that.
Yeah, and Elise Bauer of Simply Recipes, who's been doing it even longer than you did.
So, talk about business smarts.
I mean, there were people who occasionally wrote pieces, but basically, she wrote everything until she sold the site. I mean, Hank Shaw did some stuff.
I always think of that in Garrett McCord. I'm thinking of two people who really made their, to me, that they became a name by writing for her.
For Simply
Even though
Recipes.
They were doing their own thing. Yeah, I thought so. She was very smart about it.
Yeah. So let's talk about the second book, which is called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites. Like, how is it different? I read the introduction. You were like, you had to be dragged kicking and screaming to this book, as far as I can tell.
No, it wasn't. This one was a little bit, as I said, I've expressed to you all of my angst and stress over, you know, I was just really just thought it was doomed to failure. And it was also that I was so much busier and I was trying to find a way to talk about what it meant to cook every day versus everyday cooking, which can be kind of boring because we all just, you know, whip up a chicken breast and a salad sometimes, and that's fine. But I didn't want to write a cookbook of stuff that everybody already knew how to make. That I wanted to focus on the stuff that sort of uplifted a day, like that were inspired. These were the ones that were surprisingly great. These were the best parts of our day recipes.
And you were also writing it within the context of having two children.
Which was like, it felt like there's like this New Yorker thing where it's like life with two kids. It's like one kid is like, you've just got your little buddy. Two kids is like, they are everywhere and they are always hungry. And it was such a change.
And what's interesting is that, you know, it's not a 30-minute gourmet kind of a book,
no.
Even though it is an everyday kind of a book. But what you say in the book, which I think is really interesting, is like, I want these recipes to be good enough and sound delicious enough so that they're worth 30 to 45 minutes or an hour of your time.
That's because when I hear that something's like a 7-ingredient recipe, I'm like, what was the 8th, though? Could you tell me what it is? I might have it. Like, it's like this obsession where I'm like, I don't mind if it takes a little bit longer if I know why I'm spending the time on it. Let me tell you how we could make this quicker. You could probably skip the step. But here's why I think you might not want to, because I might think that what you do in the last 5-10 minutes, it should be the best part of the recipe, actually. Or why did you add it?
Right. So name 3 recipes from the second book that reflect sort of how your cooking has evolved that you think people should make.
I love the sheet pan halloumi. And I know some people were like, what is this? I don't even have this cheese. But it's this Greek...
It's a Greek cheese.
It's a Greek cheese. I feel it is, but there are versions of it in a couple other countries. So it's a grilling cheese, and it's really just wonderful, warm, and you can, it tastes like it's a hard, solid feta. It's also kind of expensive, a block of it, and I'm always like, how am I going to take this $8 block of cheese? Like, cause there are plenty of recipes that use it, and use it for more than an appetizer. Like, how can I turn this into a meal? And for me, that meant adding it to a tray of vegetables, which have this great
right,
lemon.
Almost made it like a fondue.
Yeah, like, well, exactly. But, you know, the pieces stay together, but they become one of the vegetables in the roast, and they get crispy, and you get to enjoy all of it while actually turning into meal. A lot in this book is about me taking something small that I love and trying to figure out how to turn it into dinner, because I didn't want to change what I ate and my taste because I had, there are 4 people in our family. So there's another one that's, there's an artichoke galette, and I'm not even pretending it's like a love letter to those baked artichoke dips we grew up with the mayo and the Parmesan and stuff. I wanted to make it, how can I turn it into dinner that
all
is
right.
not with a jar of mayo in it?
All right.
And I basically made this quiche galette that we eat with a salad, and it's got the artichokes in it and tiny smidge of mayo, but mostly it's, you know, eggs and milk, and it's so good, and it's definitely rich, and you wouldn't eat it.
Do you think like you've become a better cook over the time?
So much. Yes,
a confident cook.
Yes, I feel like I know how to make so many more things, and therefore I can make the changes that I want. I can say, how do I turn this great appetizer into a meal? How do I turn this dip into a meal? How do I turn this meal back into a dip? I feel like I'm able to expand and contract and use things and kind of take this, you know, a biscuit technique, and I apply it to a dinner roll or something like that.
Yeah, it's a very cool book. So you wrote something on Food 52 that I want to see if I can say it fast enough, and then I'd love you to react to it because I thought it was so interesting. So let's say the year is 2016 and you like to cook and write and always thought it would be nice to do something with this somehow, but nobody is exactly knocking down your door inviting you to. Would you start a blog? This is where I long sigh, take a drag off some imaginary cigarette, hoping with enough filters you'll mistake me for an old school French movie starlet and say, honey, why are you asking me? This is where I, basically a grandma in blogging years and still at it, am supposed to say it mattered or it didn't or it still matters or perhaps everyone is just doing it wrong. I am sorry, but I have no such wisdom slash arrogance to impart. But I do know this, almost everyone I knew in the early days who was rather good at it and wanted to stick with it has turned it into something else, either hired to write, cook, or edit full-time by a bigger outlet, has a mini empire of their own, see Pioneer Woman, or has opened a restaurant or catering company, or is a professional food photographer or cookbook ghostwriter. The field may be more crowded now than it has ever been, but as long as people are reading about food and hungry to cook dinner, not the same dinner they always cook, an inn exists. There's a way for someone who doesn't want to do things the way they've always been done and who is eager to sharpen their skills to put themselves out there and find people who will listen. And I thought that was so wise because people ask me the same question. And of course, I couldn't start Serious Eats in 2018.
Maybe it wouldn't look the same.
Right. It wouldn't look the same. And maybe it would be an Instagram account. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just know it would have the same values. And that the path to success, or whatever my definition of success was not going to be linear. But there's a fascinating optimism in what I just read that you said in that Food 52 piece, that you still think the air is pregnant with possibility for people who are...
I hope so.
Yeah.
I also think I've always just thought of blogs as just one format. It's just one way to express yourself. And so maybe, so to say that blogs are, it's a publishing format. So to say that they're over or they're not, I'm like, have we stopped publishing? I mean, like, I use WordPress. That's like what a lot of major websites,
right.
which nobody would call a blog.
That's the typewriter.
Yeah. It's just your typewriter. It's your dot. It's your, your word processor, whatever.
Right.
So I just think, you know, if you think of it that way, you're like, we all have things to say and we all want to read things. So don't get so stuck on how you do it. If you have something to say, find a way to say it.
Yeah. So what's next for you?
I'm going to write a third book.
Really?
I can't believe I just said that. Look how grown up I am. And I'm not going to whine about it. I'm kind of excited about it. I'm starting to get ideas together. But I felt actually much sooner this time of readiness for it. I really enjoy being out there. And I think of things that went right and wrong. And I'm hoping to free myself from this terror of every moment. I mean, I am obviously going to be terrified. But just to write it in the present and not just in terror that this is going to be the last thing that I ever do. And see if that comes from a better place.
But I don't get the feeling that you're ever going to give up Smitten Kitchen, the blog.
I don't want to. I mean, I hope that there's always a reason for people to come there. I hope there's always something that people want. I also never wanted to be so tied to one format that I felt like it constrained me, but I also have not yet wanted to change it. But yeah, I've always thought it could change. That's fine. I'm okay with it changing, but I haven't really wanted to change it.
Yeah.
Redesign it maybe, but not change it.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's time for the special sauce all-you-can-answer buffet.
Okay.
So the first question is, who's at your last supper? No family allowed.
Eleanor Roosevelt.
Okay.
Gotta have Eleanor Roosevelt.
All right.
I'm trying to stay out of politics, Deb. Stay out of it. I want Jackie O there. I want, I do. I feel like she might just like look down at us.
All right.
I just need to. I want Julia Child there because I think she would just have one too many.
And she's incredibly charming and so not full of herself. I only met her once, but she was just like so normal.
Yeah, I think that's why. I think she would be a great conversationalist. I wonder how she and Jackie O would...
All right.
Bang into each
other. One more.
Oh, God, we need some. I got to have Michelle Obama there. I got to have her there. She's just amazing.
Wow, what a table. Michelle Obama,
that's
Eleanor
two first
Roosevelt.
Ladies.
That's so cool. That's I love this table.
Okay, I'm like, I mean, it's just, yeah, I think this is going to work. And they're like, no men allowed. What's going on there?
I'll be the server. Okay, I'll be the server. So what are you eating?
Oh, my goodness. I feel like I really love, I've gotten so into in the last few years, and this is definitely a like, woo, you know, sometimes we have four people at the table, sometimes it's eight, but I've gotten really into these sort of like assemble your own type things. Oh God, the street cart chicken in this book, but I always set it out as like, here's the chicken, here's the rice, here's the salad, here's the stuff, and you kind of put it together. I do that all summer. I do those. I have a chicken gyro salad. I have a Cobb salad, I do that way, but I love doing that kind of thing. Maybe it's a little bit casual, but I like the idea
it's
of that everybody
okay.
can kind of make it. And if you're off
it's
carbs,
your last supper.
Or off last supper.
Yeah.
Oh, French fries and champagne. What are we even talking about? Sorry, I missed the last part. French fries, oysters and champagne. Like
that's
that.
It.
That's it. Maybe some artichokes. They're like my favorite food. So.
That's
I thought you were thinking, what am I going to cook
no,
for them? And
no,
I'm like,
no,
we're
no.
going to make it casual.
No,
no.
Man,
last
can...
supper. Oh no, duck fat fries. Ice cold champagne, ice cold, like it has to be so cold. Sweet small oysters, and maybe some sort of crispy artichokes.
Ooh, that sounds style. Awesome. So, what are you listening to? Is there music?
I guess we would definitely have to have some music. I'm like, I was listening to Lord on the way here, but I feel like we should shake it up a little bit.
All right, so let's shake it up. No Lord.
Okay, so like no Lord. I feel like we need to have some good jazz in there, and we need to have.
Miles Davis, Charlie Parker.
I feel like definitely some Charlie Parker. I guess we'll put on some Rolling Stones, too. Everyone likes the Rolling Stones.
All right, one
but
more
yeah,
one more band. So you got the Rolling
okay,
Stones,
got Rolling Stones,
Charlie Parker.
I want to put on the Afro-Cuban All-Stars.
Oh, I love the Afro-Cuban All-Stars.
It makes people so happy to
you know
listen
that
to.
I have a T-shirt from the original Buena Vista Social Club. Concert at Carnegie Hall. My wife said, you know, that T-shirt should be retired. It's from 2000. I said, but it's the coolest T-shirt ever.
I was working at Tower Records back then, and it was like the biggest thing, all of those and all of the artists that spun off of it. And I just thought, I will listen to this music forever. This is such
And you know, that was
music.
Such a magical moment. And I had the worst seats in the house at Carnegie Hall. But the feeling from coming from the stage, from those musicians who'd never been out of Cuba, to be in a place where they were getting all this love from the audience and where they felt free for the first time, it was the feeling was overwhelming. You know, it's like everyone was in tears in the audience.
It's really just such happy music, and it's such I really love, and I want to say I had like at least eight CDs that came out of that same
Absolutely.
Network of people and all their side projects that are like completely,
Chucho Valdez.
Yeah, all of it, and it's really great. That would be we gotta bust that out for dinner party music. I mean, we need to. I'm gonna do it.
All right, three books that have influenced your life.
I don't know why, but I always like, I just read Special Topics in Calamity Physics like probably 10 or 15 years ago.
Wait.
And I loved that. Love Roxane Gay's Bad Feminist, because how could you not? I mean, I generally.
I've heard it's awesome.
It was like, she gets me. And I'm like, what am I reading? I'm like this. My favorite thing is The Last Thing I Cooked. And my favorite book is the last book I'm reading. And I'm reading, Little Fires Everywhere right now.
Oh,
I'm like the last person.
Celeste Ng? How do you
yes,
pronounce that?
Yes, I'm gonna get myself in trouble because I know that her Twitter handle is pronounced Ng.
Ng.
I think. Yes. See,
Got
I had
it.
To picture her Twitter. It's Ng, I think.
Three things in your kitchen that you can't do without.
Small offset spatula.
Okay.
Flexible fish spatula.
Okay.
And Y-shaped peeler.
All right. I like that. They're all sort of multi-use.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they're just the tools that like, no, I don't want to use the other peeler and I don't want to have to try to separate my halloumi roast from the pan with a thudding thick spatula.
Yeah. Kenji always, he imparted this wisdom that he really didn't like single use implements in the kitchen, except on rare occasions.
That was my MO for like the first 10 years. And the last couple, I'm like, but there's a couple very specific things that I love.
So what do you cook when there's nothing in the house to eat?
I would say over the last couple of years, I mean, I've always been like, well, there's pasta. Isn't there pasta? We can make something with pasta. But I've gotten much more into maybe just trying to look at the post. You know, I love carbs, obviously, and gluten full. But I love taking a can of beans and treating it the way you would have pasta. Maybe you use a spicy tomato sauce. Maybe you use an herby pesto. Maybe you use...
Well, you saute some garlic.
Exactly. Maybe you steam some clams and you toss them with chickpeas and lemon instead of linguine. I love using chickpeas or white beans as sort of the place where, and it's closer to the earth and probably more wholesome. It's probably even more economical because you always have a can of beans around.
Right.
And I think there's some great innovation in there. Maybe you throw an egg on top of it, but I love the idea of taking your
starting with
you
a
might
can
do
of
with
beans.
Your, exactly.
Got yeah. it. I love it. It's just been declared Deb Pearlman Day all over the world. Oh. What's happening on that day?
Oh my goodness. This is the kind of thing where I feel like my husband would be like, you forgot to mention the artichokes. We're all eating artichokes. We're eating artichokes. We're eating them al Judea. We're eating them a la Romana. Okay. We're doing carciofi
all right.
everywhere.
So
okay.
It's artichoke.
I love artichokes.
Okay.
Most people do not. I will eat your artichokes for you. There's definitely cold champagne everywhere. Is this just about food? Of course, it's
no,
just about food.
No, it could be.
All right, we're going to go see the Afro-Cuban All-Stars.
All right.
All right, we're going to go see a good show. We're going to go on the Wonder Wheel at Coney Island.
Okay.
Got to have some Coney Island in there.
I love this.
We're going to eat funnel cake.
Okay.
I love old carnival stuff. I haven't figured out how this is all going to fit into a day, but like, what are all of Deb's here? I love like a good busted carnival.
I love it. It's a carnival. It's Deb Pearlman Carnival
Day. We're
going
to do some sunset meal on the beach. I feel like these are the big things. We got the major things.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Deb Pearlman. Check out Smitten Kitchen on the web and also pick up a copy of Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites. It has really been a pleasure to
Thank
have you.
You
here.
Thanks for having me on.
So long, Serious Eaters. We'll see you next time.